bills for Monday, February 25th. We're going to start with a public hearing on HJR 2. We have two legislators here who are need to be other committees. Then we'll close that and go to other items. So first, open a public hearing on HJR 2. Representatives Wisden and Greenlick, please.
I'll go to the left, Chief.
Are they testifying on the same side?
Come on.
Apparently, you both want your two counties to merge.
Is this about assault weapons?
It's scary when you get it right.
I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, Northwest Portland and West. And I'm really here to urge you to move House Joint Resolution 2. It's a very simple bill that has, at this moment, only hypothetical need. The counties know that I think counties are archaic, and I'm always kidding them about my bill to abolish counties, but this isn't that at all. It does turn out that counties are in trouble, and we all know that when the ONC funds stopped coming, more and more counties began to feel the pinch, and it struck me there's the possibility that we might eventually need to merge two or more counties under dire circumstances. But that's not an easy thing to do under the current Constitution. So all HJR 2 does is refer to the voters a constitutional amendment that would allow the legislature to merge two or more counties with the approval of the voters of those counties. So this would simply be a place where the county decided it was in their best interest to merge for one reason or another. There would be an act of the legislature that would go to the ballot in the two counties and would allow the merger of those counties with the approval of the voters of those counties. Basically, that's all it does.
Chair, colleagues, for the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. And no, we don't want to merge with Multnomah County, Mr. Chair.
I thought you wanted to merge with Jefferson and Crook.
For the chair and the good representative, Greenlee, that, you know, we live together, so we come up with all these great ideas. We have this conversation. This morning we're talking about the Academy Awards, but one day we talked about the fact that, as the representative said, that I thought it was actually in statute that counties would merge and it was a procedure. And as we got into the discussion and found out that it's not in statute, representative and I said, well, let's put it in there. We may have to change it if the counties have some input. We'd be glad to listen to that. But I think it should be in statute that gives counties this option if things get real bad, and they are in some of our counties we've heard from. So again, bipartisan bill. And we appreciate you hearing it this early and hope that we can move it or amend it and make it good policy. So gives counties an option. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for our honorable colleagues? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondered, specific counties asking for this, or and how does the association feel about this?
Well, I know Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington want to merge. And I had a bill to that effect that got
yes, we've discussed that.
That
got supernatural knowledge.
That got lots of interest. But no, the fact is they haven't. But what we're finding is that there are counties that have to close their library system. There are counties that can't provide sheriff service because of financial difficulties. There are some counties that merge some of the functions. So, that, for example, there are three counties that have merged the public health function out along the Columbia River. I mean, there are counties are beginning to think about how they're going to make it, and it just might be possible that some of them would come to a conclusion that they might want to merge. They can't do that under the current Constitution. All this is would be a way if they decided they did want to merge Coos and Curry, or I don't really Sherman and Gilliam, places that it might make sense to be able to merge. This would simply allow that to happen if the counties wanted it to happen.
Thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
hearing on HJR 2. I'm going to open a public hearing on HCR 10. And Representatives Richardson and Bailey, please.
HCR 10 honors the Council General for promoting and assisting person-to-person exchanges between Oregon and the People's Republic of China. There is no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on the measure.
Great. Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jules Bailey, House District 42. Pleased to be sitting with you here today with my good colleague in support of HCR 10, honoring Consul General Gao Jiansheng for the relationship that he has helped forge between China and the state of Oregon. And I think we've seen some pretty remarkable things come out of that relationship. I would characterize for you that the relationship, whether it is in regards to culture or trade or economic development, is at an all-time high. And it has manifested in such ways as we have had additional interest from other cities and provinces within China that want to become formal partners with the state of Oregon in the way that that Fujian province has become a partner with the state of Oregon. We've also seen instances where there has been requests that materials that are being shipped from other parts of the United States to China be shipped through the port of Portland, that Chinese authorities want to see those materials shipped through Oregon to honor the relationship that that the Consul General and folks on our side, including Representative Richardson, have worked so hard to forge between the two countries. So as his term of service comes to an end, we want to honor his service, and we hope that you will pass this out so it will be ready here in the chamber in time to honor him with this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dennis Richardson. I represent District 4 in Southern Oregon, and I join in asking for this committee to consider helping us show honor to Ambassador Gao. In the past 4.5 years, he's been to Oregon 45 times, and so about 10 times a year. And normally, the ambassadors, the consul generals, will go to those states that are the largest ones in their district, but he has actually become very dedicated to helping Oregon succeed. He's worked with us on our recent Pink Tan Island work, where we're trying to take our economic and skill with environmental qualifications and machinery and so forth for air and water to an island that's off the coast of China that they want to master plan this island, but do it in a very environmentally friendly and sustainable way. And so he has been a tremendous asset in connecting us with the right people. With education, we now have 25 Confucius classrooms where the Chinese government is providing teachers to those schools that would like to learn, have their students learn Chinese. And that is it is either the largest in the country, the number in the state, or close to that. And in our Rogue Valley area, we have over 900 students now studying Chinese as a second language, which is great exercise, even if they don't become proficient, because it's not easy. But anyway, Ambassador Gao has, through his assistant directors over education, has provided Oregon with an additional 10 scholarships for Oregon students that would like to study with full-ride scholarships in Chinese universities. And he's been just so gracious and respectful to us, and we would like to show that respect for him as he's ending his tenure as the Consul General in San Francisco. So we would ask that this might move forward today if possible.
All right. Thank you for helping make sure that this got onto our agenda in time to honor the ambassador. Any questions for our colleagues? Thank you both.
Thank you, Chair, for doing this so quickly. Appreciate it.
Close the public hearing on HCR 10 and open a work session on HCR 10.
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 10 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Hoyle moves HCR 10 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, motion passes and HCR 10 is adopted. Representatives Bailey and Richardson will co-carry. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2168, Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2168 directs allocations to general fund, county general fund of certain proceeds from disposition of certain county property effective on 91st day following sine die. There is a no revenue impact. We have not received a fiscal impact statement.
Chair Garrett, committee members, for the record, Wayne Krieger, State Rep, District 1, South Coast. 6 or 8 months ago, I was contacted by our other county, one of the other county commissioners in Curry County, Dave Itzen, regarding drafting House Bill 2168. As you heard earlier today, and we've heard over the last couple of years, the timber-dependent counties are all struggling. And Curry County has gotten to the point where our sheriff looks like he's going to actually resign at the end of July, the end of the fiscal year, shut the jail down and fire everybody. He has no money after that time. So he has been up here talking to the governor and staff, and there's some real serious implications if this continues as it is. Many of the 18 dependent counties are seeking the ability to have funds derived from the sale of property and assets go directly to their general fund. As it is now, it goes to the different taxing districts. And this bill would allow those assets, when sold, actually to be able to go to the general fund, and the county commissioners then could prioritize the spending of those dollars. When these unanticipated revenue sources come in from the sale, they normally go into these other districts that already have their budgets in place and balanced, and I wouldn't say it becomes a slush fund, but it's money that they really weren't anticipating necessarily. Here today with me is our Curry County Commissioner David Smith, and he will present the county's need for the legislation.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, fellow representatives, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm board chair of Curry County. House Bill...
Commissioner, I need your name for the record, please.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. David Brock Smith, board chair, Curry County Commissioners. And forgive me, it's my first time testifying before
that's
you.
That's fine.
House Bill 2168 will allow us to be better stewards of the tax foreclosed properties for the different taxing districts. Just a little history lesson on Curry County. It was mentioned earlier. Curry County is on the brink of fiscal insolvency. As Representative Krieger mentioned, we need $6.5 million to operate our budgets, which might be small to other counties, but is huge for us because we have a $4.4 million deficit. And that equates to a serious problem with public safety alone. Our funding situation and department services as it is, to keep the minimum staffing levels in the jail, for example, they utilize and deputize the 911 operators as corrections deputies. And it also helps meet the gender needs for the corrections deputies. So those two departments alone, along with just the sheriff, is $1.5 million. And that leaves only $600,000 unless other funding resources are realized to fund the very mechanisms or departments that assess and collect and disperse the taxes to the other taxing districts, which is not enough money to do that. So this bill would allow us, as I said earlier, to be better stewards of these tax foreclosed properties. As it sits now under current legislation, current law, the tax formula for any sale of properties is allowed to be distributed through a funding formula that is generated by the taxable revenue for those different taxing districts. So, for example, our libraries are funded very well. Our Brookings Library, as a matter of fact, I don't want to use the term overfunded, but they have a surplus of revenue that they went ahead and bought two homes because they would, so that they could have a better return off their investment rather than just the regular capital investments that you would do for taxing districts. we have a, Kern County has some tax foreclosed property, especially in the north end of the county. It's, used to be what's called Pacific City. There are resources on that property that the county could have access to. The problem is there's no real incentive, considering that our tax base, we would generate a very limited amount of revenue to the county's general fund with the current allocation formula. Changing that allocation formula and giving a broader hand, if you will, to allow the county to see where these revenues, once realized, could go, would be greatly appreciated. For example, the Central Curry School District in Gold Beach doesn't really need any capital outlay project money, whereas the Port Orford Langlois School District in Port Orford needs a new roof for their gym and has no revenue sources to pay for that. Also, the allowing us to be better stewards of this money allows us to go ahead and do maybe possibly have investments in said property so that we can enhance the property to generate more revenue off of the foreclosed property and be able to disperse it through the different taxing districts. In closing, I just want to say that this is just one small piece in the complex solution to the county's, not just Curry County, but other counties' fiscal problems. And as we all know, healthy counties breed healthy libraries and school districts and different taxing districts, fire districts, and communities. But also, on the other end, healthy counties breed a healthy state of Oregon. And any help that you can give in these areas will be greatly beneficial to not only the people of Curry County, but the people of our great state. So thank you for your consideration, and I appreciate all your consideration in this matter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Kenemer, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, how does the Association of Oregon Counties feel about this idea?
The Association of Oregon Counties, I was spoke with them today, and they have no opposition to this bill.
And I see the League of Cities is here. I don't know, is there a thought? Is there, okay.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Some of the lands that we're talking about you might acquire by foreclosure because of the failure to pay taxes.
Correct.
Does this law, after the change, still require that the portion of the value of the property that represents the taxes that have not been paid, that those be paid?
It does, sir.
Okay. That's all I need. Thank you. So your proceeds, if I could, Mr. Chair, your proceeds are just of the balance that's left after paying all those other things that are already sitting on that property.
Correct, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, are the property tax rates in Curry County able to be raised, or are they pretty much locked in from ballot measures that have been passed?
Representative Holby, as a matter of fact, I've been in office 49 days. And my first 2.5 weeks were spent creating a first of ever of its kind, to my knowledge, of a 2.1 budget, what it's called, which to show that not only myself, but our citizens and our departments, what those levels of services would be, which led me to work out a situation and a levy proposal that I presented to the Board of Commissioners of a funding solution to save our county. That is, I will be signing when I get back tomorrow, and will be on the May ballot, which is a similar, which was come to in a similar dynamic as I'm asking for this bill, which is looking at the public safety departments, the percent of allocation of use between the incorporated cities and the unincorporated areas, and knowing how much money is needed to fund the proper service levels for the citizens, it's a split rate levy that they'll be voting on in May, and we're very hopeful that we'll be successful.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. Yes. We tried a levy a year ago.
Three.
And it failed. But I think the people are starting to realize
that, hey, we have to do more than we're doing now. At the same time, you know, when they were doing the Nike bill and they were talking about $97,000 average income, and Intel says, well, we got $114,000 income. I don't know if you can find anybody in Curry County that makes that money, period, okay, even if you own a business. The average income in Curry County is just a little more than a third of the rest of that area up there. So when they pay $1,000 in taxes of their disposable income, it means a whole lot more. And we also have a disproportionate number of seniors down there, and a lot of them on fixed income, and a high number of them are vets. But we're trying to get them to realize they have to do more.
If I may, Mr. Chair. In fact, Curry County has the highest veteran population per capita than any other county in the state and 14th in the nation.
I see no further questions. Thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No other witness signed up for this bill, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2168. And which one? We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2306. I have three signed up for that bill. Christine Ruck, William, I can't quite read it, maybe Everett or Enneritz, or Greg Leo, please.
Sheriff, one of the carriers.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I move the committee House Bill 2306 designates any elected county or city office as nonpartisan.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Christine Ruck, and Chair, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify and other members of the committee. I'm an elected PCP in Linn County, and I've represented two different precincts based on redistricting, and I happen to be a constituent of Representative Barnhart. So this is a good chance for us to work together on this. I examined what was in House Bill 2306, and what I found was an intention that says, let's go to a nonpartisan state. But when I read further through the bill, I found some problems, and I summarized those on the last page of my testimony. I found things that appear to be the consequences of that decision, and I'm pretty concerned about what would happen. By going to strictly a nonpartisan, the voters are going to lose some information. The voters in those counties, they rely on it to make their choices. More information is always going to be better for a voter. That's part of what campaigns are all about. We need to make sure that stays there. The counties have always had the choice to go to home rule and to make these kind of choices for themselves. That was a constitutional amendment in 1973, and so it really is not even necessary. Counties can do this anytime they want. Citizens could do this by petitioning to have that placed on the ballot. So we don't need to go down that road. But what I found a little bit disturbing, and this affects me personally, is as an elected precinct committee person, one of my roles is to help sort through candidates to fill vacancies, should they occur. And those are unanticipated. You sit and you wait. If a vacancy occurs, you get called up and say, look, here's a stack of people who want to take that seat. Sort through who's the most suitable for that process, for that new position. Are they qualified? Do they have the background experience? Do they have the dedication to serve? Do they have the personal integrity to make those choices? We're asking of them. But if those two portions of the ORS statutes are pulled out, I don't get to do that anymore. And that's a shame. It's one of my unpaid positions that I gladly do for twice my current salary. Really, right now, I think we're starting to pull on some threads and we're going to have the whole sweater come apart. As soon as you remove that participation of the precinct committee people and letting us be involved, you're also starting to disassemble the primary process. Because if you're nonpartisan, why would you even bother to go with a primary? All of a sudden, instead of having two or three candidates, you know, really trying to figure out who's best for the job, I could easily see, like, a precinct or filling a vacancy, 8, 10, 12, maybe even a couple of dozen people step forward. Then all of a sudden, the voters have a real tough choice to make. It's like looking at a basket of puppies. Which one do I pick? They don't know what they really want if you don't narrow down the choices. That's what the primary process is there to do. And so we want to make sure that that remains vigorous. It's also a great check between the citizens and their elected officials. If the elected officials are not reflecting the will of the people who sent them to office, that's the place where they get challenged. And I think we all end up with a better government, top to bottom, when we keep those processes in place. One of the things I did while doing my homework was to talk to current commissioners in Linn and Benton counties, Republicans and Democrats, to ask them what they thought about this bill. And specifically, I didn't understand home rule very well, so when I talked to Jay Dixon as one of the Benton County commissioners, he was unaware that this was actually going to create a hole in his city charter. They currently rely on that precinct committee person mechanism to help them fill vacancies. Well, if that's pulled out, what now? They have to develop a new process. Or if they don't develop it, then it goes further down the ORS statutes and it leaves certain appointment authority to the governor's office. And that creates a great deal of distance between the voter and the person doing the appointment. I think we lose an awful lot of local knowledge and wisdom when we pull the PCPs out of that process. So thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Thank you for coming up to testify. Okay. Mr. Sheritz?
Yeah. My name is Bill Sheritz, Mr. Chair, members of the House Rules Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm here from House District 15, Albany. I'm the elected PCP for Linn County Precinct 93. I'm also the precinct committee person chair for the Linn County Republicans. As that, I'm representing 83 PCPs, appointed and elected. I'm here because this bill has the effect of disenfranchising the grassroots. The PCPs that I work with are just getting their feet wet in politics. They're just getting involved, and they have a voice. This past year, this past fall, when Senate District 8 became vacant, we were actively involved, both Benton and Linn County, in finding a suitable replacement at short notice during the election season. These people were involved, and it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was a smooth process, but it worked, and it worked well for both Benton and Linn County. And those are my remarks. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Chair Garrett and members of the House Rules Committee, Greg Leo here for the Oregon Republican Party today. The Oregon Republican Party would oppose House Bill 2306 for many of the reasons that really have been expressed here. First of all, this should be a matter of local control. If a city or a county wants to have partisan offices, they should decide that themselves, not we at the state level. But I think the point that, you know, both Chris and Bill have made here is about civic engagement. You know, what we need in public life is more people being engaged at their community, you know, choosing to spend the hours that it takes to learn about public issues than to participate at the local level, not less. And although I know I'm on shaky ground raising this issue, I would make a case for partisanship. In a sense, having political parties that work with people at the basic level to learn about political involvement, I think does encourage that involvement. So there is something to be said for having the political parties involved in this process. So I kind of look at 2306 as a bill looking for a problem to solve. I frankly couldn't find any cities that have partisan councilors. However, there are counties, and I think in those contexts, they do make a difference. So I wanted to thank you for the opportunity today to voice the Oregon Republican Party's opposition to House Bill 2306.
Thank you. Appreciate you all being here. Any questions? Seeing none.
Great.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have one more person who signed up.
Mr. Chair, for the record, yeah. I just want to make sure that Ken Taylor, Jeff Reynolds' testimonies were also in the record.
Yep.
That's been added. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you again. Rebecca Roth.
Okay. I'm Rebecca Roth, and I'm a PCP, and I'm still learning politics, but I'm very distressed at all of the bills I see coming through the legislature this time, because so many of them seem to be stripping away rights of Oregonians, and this one seems to be one more like it. And I want to remind you of what I consider to be a very important thing that George Washington said, which is that arbitrary power is built on the ruins of liberty, abused to licentiousness. And licentiousness isn't a word that we use very much anymore, but it's when you give yourself license. And one of the reasons that our founders broke up the power of government into so many pieces is because they recognized that people, when given power, will use it. They'll give themselves license to do whatever they feel they want to. And by breaking up the power, giving it to the people, it causes us to be able to talk with each other and to be able to present our case to each other. And in countries where power is consolidated, I grew up in Congo under a dictatorship, and power was consolidated. Whatever the president, quote unquote president, felt like doing was what happened. And there were many arbitrary things that happened under his reign. And I hate to see our republic, a republic is where the people of the country elect people to represent them in the halls of Congress so that they don't have to be down here all the time. They need to be able to trust the people that are down here. And if the people who are down here forget that the power was broken up for the people's benefit, then the people who are down here cannot be trusted anymore by the people. So I want to remind you, arbitrary power is best established on the ruins of liberty, abused to licentiousness. Thank you.
Thank you. That is all the testimony we have on this bill. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2306. And we have one item left, and that is open a public hearing on House Bill 2413. Anthony Behrens and David Factor.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2413 requires county clerk and county that maintains list of wedding officiants to include name and contact information of officiant if requested. Limits request to officiants who live in county, have not been convicted of felony or misdemeanor involving dishonesty, and serve 1 year or more as county clerk or judge pro tem in county. There is no revenue impact. We have not received a fiscal impact.
Why don't you start, Mr.
Okay.
Behrens? You brought us
Thank
the bill.
Thank you, Chair Garrett, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anthony Behrens. I'm here in my personal capacity as a person. And I appreciate your taking the time to hear this bill and hear my testimony today. And I also would like to thank Representative Cameron for sponsoring the bill. I'll give you a little bit of background about myself so you know why this issue is of interest to me. I'm a resident of the of Salem. I've been an Oregonian for my entire life. I graduated South Salem High School, Willamette University, and Willamette University College of Law. For 2 years, I was employed as a circuit court judge pro tem, and in that capacity, I started officiating weddings as part of my official duties. Since about 2006, I've officiated well over 1,000 weddings, including one here in this Capitol building. That is a secret, so please don't tell anyone. And I've talked with hundreds of more Oregonians about weddings and just really about how difficult it is to find someone trustworthy and responsible to officiate their wedding. Literally every couple, or at least 99% of the people I speak with, have had difficulty finding someone to do this. I turn away hundreds of people a year just because I am overbooked myself. Aside from kind of the practical issues involved with this, you know, is the person going to show up? You know, are they experienced? Do they do a good job? There's some significant consumer protection implications to the process that we have currently. Primarily, if you look attached to my testimony, there's a
a redacted copy of a marriage license. And if you look at that document, it requests essentially all of the information necessary to steal one's identity. It requests mother's maiden names, dates of birth, addresses, occupation, legal signature, even father's names, places of birth, really a kind of recipe for identity theft. And the wedding officiant is charged by statute with filing the marriage license. And so the officiant essentially has unfettered access to this information. And most counties actually provide a copy of the marriage license for the officiant. It does not contain the social security numbers, though, but I'm sure, as you understand, it really would take only a second for an identity thief to copy the social security numbers off the official license. The couples I've talked to, and again, this is thousands of people, well, over 1,000 people, and again, 99% of these people don't understand that they're providing this personal information to the officiant. And for the most part, or in a lot of circumstances, this officiant is basically a stranger to the couple. Because unless they know someone, either they're a member of a church or perhaps they know a judge, essentially they have to find someone they don't know to help them. And that's really difficult to do. I've actually tried to help people that have contacted me find other officiants for days that I'm booked. And it is really difficult to find someone who is kind of, who has any kind of reputation. I think that they're really right now probably the best alternative or one of the best alternatives for people are judges. And I'm sorry, if you have a question, feel free to jump in. But our judges, but in my experience, relatively few judges, given the number of people that are getting married, actually officiate weddings. To kind of give you an example of that, earlier this month I married a couple that drove down from Portland, and all they wanted was a legal ceremony to be legally married. And people often need to do that quickly, and there are kind of a number of legal reasons, financial reasons for that. One's taxes, insurance. Some people are here on fiancé visas, so they need to get married within a certain amount of time. This particular couple applied for the license, received their license, and then attempted to get an appointment with a judge in Multnomah County. The earliest appointment they could find was over two months out. The problem with that is the wedding license expires in 60 days. So literally they would have had to make the appointment and then obtain a new wedding license and spend additional money. So what this bill does, what House Bill 2413 does, is expand kind of the list of more trustworthy officiants available to consumers and makes it easier for consumers to find them. Right now, one of the ways consumers contact judges is through a list, and that list is provided usually by the county. There are some counties that don't provide lists, but a number of counties do, and most of those lists are confined to judges. So what House Bill 2413 would do is it would require counties, upon the request of an officiant who's otherwise authorized, who lives in the county, and who has served as a circuit court judge pro tem or a county clerk, to be added to that list as long as they demonstrate to the reasonable satisfaction of the county that they have not been convicted of a felony or a crime involving a misdemeanor involving dishonesty and are otherwise authorized to officiate weddings in the state. House Bill 2413 does not require counties to maintain a list if they decide they don't want to maintain a list. It doesn't require counties to keep maintaining a list if they decide at some point in the future they don't want to. It doesn't prevent counties from adding other people to the list if they want to add other people. It doesn't impact the list of judges at all. That list is still remains the same. There's no impact to that. But what it essentially does is give consumers an easy way to find people to help them. And I know this isn't something that a lot of people talk about, but it is something that's important to people that get married, and that's when they actually realize it's a problem. So what House Bill 2413 does is it increases that access for consumers, there's no cost to the state. There's little or no inconvenience to the counties. It doesn't propose new regulations, so it's not attempting to regulate wedding officiants. And so I hope that you guys will give this some serious consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Mr. Factor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hicks, Vice Chair. Vice Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. My name is David Factor. I'm staff counsel with the Oregon Judicial Department. On behalf of the Judicial Department and the Chief Justice, we'd like to make just one very narrow comment related to the bill and offer an amendment to delete Section 1.2b regarding the inclusion of the term pro tem judges as it's used in the bill. Certainly, it's a policy question for you whether or not the legislature to decide what, if any, consumer protections this bill provides and who should be allowed to marry persons, but there's aspects of the bill that sort of touch on judicial branch matters. It's the Chief Justice's sole responsibility to appoint people to be pro tem judges and to assign them to their duties. They are the authorizing body. In order to appoint someone as a pro tem judge, to promote the purpose is to promote the efficient administration of justice. It requires that person to be in good standing with the Oregon State Bar 3 years preceding the appointment and to continue throughout their term as a pro tem. The bill as drafted would allow a person who's no longer a judge pro tem to use the title on this list that might be maintained by the county. Whether or not that person could still be appointed or would still be appointed by the Chief Justice. So our objection is to that use of the term pro tem judge and would like to have that section deleted. We think that it's solely the authority of the Supreme Court to define the duties of those who are appointed as judges pro tem.
I have a question for you, Mr. Factor. Is the objection to the identification of the person as a current or former pro tem judge or to that person being able to be on the list? In other words, if I was looking for an officiant and got this list, all I saw was a person's name, not the fact that they had been a pro tem judge, would that still be an objection from the department?
No, that would not.
Okay.
Chair Garrett, that would not be an objection. The objection is related to the use of that term. If someone was holding themselves out as a wedding officiant and they characterized and they had their resume or their in a location where they could do that, there's no objection to someone using the term that they previously were a judge pro tem, but to have the county hold it as here's a list of officiants who are who are capable of performing marriages, and it only identifies people who were previously county clerks or were previously judges pro tem. It holds them out as something that they aren't currently, I'm not sure how that forwards the consumer protection issues raised by the proponent.
But if the county produced a list of names only without any identifying information about previous offices that those people held, would that be acceptable?
Yes.
Okay. Further questions? Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I missed part of the testimony. This may have already been covered. This statute doesn't cover having marriages officiated by ministers of religion, does it?
Chair Garrett.
That's a different statute, isn't it?
Chair Garrett, Representative Barnhart, the statute that authorizes people to solemnize weddings is in Chapter 106, and it talks about a judicial officer, a county clerk or an ordained person, as you're speaking of. This bill doesn't impact that list of people. It's still the same list of people. And the way the bill's drafted, if I may, I didn't anticipate that anyone would be using a title that they didn't have, and I kind of thought that would be sort of up to the county if they, you know, I would assume they would just put the name, or maybe they would put other, but clearly there's no, it would be no intent for to have someone use a title that they weren't allowed. It actually references, I believe the bill references former, and that's not a title that a former person would currently possess. So I'm happy to work with judicial if there's a concern about that clarification.
Would you have any objection to including state representatives and state senators in your list?
Me, not personally, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the answer.
Representative Barnhart, Dembro, please.
Yes. Well, first of all, let me say I would object to that. As I imagine one of these lists, and if I were consulting one of these lists, because I decided that 40 years of marriage was too long and I wanted to do another one, and went to look at this efficient list, presumably a person's name would be there together with why they're on the list. No? I mean, would I get a person's name and then it would indicate if they were clergy, and then if I were interested in having a member of the clergy be the officiant, I'd see their name there. If I were more interested in seeing a judge, I would see that was their qualification. If I saw that someone was a current county clerk or a former county clerk, that qualification would be there, or someone had been a former judge pro tem, that would be there, and then I would probably choose accordingly, according to their availability, et cetera. So it is, just for it to be clear for me, so just, you know, putting in parentheses that their qualification is that they're a former judge pro tem, that would be a problem, or that would not be a problem, sir?
I think if, pardon me, Chair Garrett, Representative Dembro, the objection is to the use of the term judge pro tem to characterize the person on the list as something they may not be, or that they've been given some official status by the Supreme Court that they currently don't hold.
Mm-hmm. But again, just follow up, it's okay for them to list on a resume, for example, that they have been a judge pro tem.
Yes, certainly. I think that's a fair statement. Mm-hmm.
So this, if it were presented appropriately, would be comparable to that. I mean, if it were clear that they were a former judge pro tem.
Yes.
As I understand it, counties, there's no requirement for counties to maintain a list like this.
I believe that's true.
And this would say that if they do, then these people will be included. But my question is, are you aware if there's any restriction now on counties including pro tem judges or former pro tem judges on their list? In other words, right now there could be lists out there that would trigger the concern you've expressed.
Chair Garrett, I suppose that is possible.
Okay.
But now the bill calls out two specific groups of people should the county maintain a list, that the county clerk would put on the list people who were former county clerks and folks who were judges pro tem or former judges pro tem. And so it's pulling them out and giving them some stamp of being more trustworthy or not, that is beyond the scope of the duties for which they were appointed as judges pro tem.
I see. Okay. Further further questions? Seeing none, thank you both.
Thank you.
We'll figure out later what to do with this.
Thank you.
Ms. Roth, did you sign up for this bill as well?
Yes. I didn't know this one was going to be done, but I was interested in it.
Come on up.
And I just am a little bit more, or should I say less prepared for this one.
That's all right.
Again, I'm Rebecca Roth, and I have double vision. I can't see any of your names, so just chair and committee.
That's
and,
fine.
It's in the interest of our society to have a very high view of marriage, and the government is part of that body that communicates that to the society. And our society is falling apart in terms of marriage. People are jumping into marriage and out of it again in ways that are destroying the family and making the fabric of our society fall apart in terms of relationships. The goal of Christian marriage is to maintain marriage from the time you get married to the time you die. And I realize that may not be in the interest of any of you on this panel. I don't know. But in terms of the state, it is a good thing in the state to have strong families. And so one of the things that we've had in the past is that people who can perform marriages are people who understand this concept, hopefully. The ministers of Oregon have tried to create hoops to jump through, like marriage counseling, which takes several months so that the people can know each other for a while and work through some of the issues that marriage will involve. And when the state comes in with a thing calling the marriage people, the people who are going to be married, consumers, what is that about? Are they actually consumers, or are they two people who are going to form a union that may produce children and need to have a strong bond so that the home can be intact? Children do so much better in a home that's intact, with the father and the mother being their real father and mother, and not just the next boyfriend that lives with them. You all know that there's real high abuse in homes where there's just a boyfriend living in, or all the different things that children endure these days with the state of marriage in our society. So I want to have you give this very diligent consideration, that we not just open it up to just anybody being able to perform marriages. I believe that people who are getting married deserve to have somebody who can lead them in through the steps of, do I want to be committed to this person for the rest of my life? In the 1800s, the Republican Party was formed on the goal of getting to have one man, one woman marriage, because the slavery issue had been a big thing, and people who owned slaves slept with their slaves, and there was a lot of impropriety that went on with marriage. One of the goals of the first Republican Party platform was to initiate one woman, one man marriage as being a solid legal thing in America. And I think Americans still deserve that. At that time, they were also dealing with polygamy and lots of other forms of abuse of the idea of marriage. And I just want to really caution you about just throwing anybody who can lead consumers into an overnight stand, or just not understanding the concept of what marriage really is. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's it for the testimony on this bill. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2413. And that concludes our business for the day. Committee is adjourned.